Good evening and welcome back to Editing Aloud. Since we last met, we've had the announcement of a further 2 weeks of lockdown. As a result, we've had economists scrambling to revise down their growth forecasts. The South African economy now set, according to the Reserve Bank, to plummet by 6% this year. Pretty catastrophic, possibly more than 1 million jobs lost, and some estimates are even higher. And a sudden, quite unexpected rate cut, another one, from the Reserve Bank. Lumkile Mondi, did you expect yesterday's 100 basis point Reserve Bank rate cut?
Yes, I did, because we thought the 1% cut some weeks ago wasn't going to be enough to bring the relief that's so much required to households and those that are highly indebted, but also to bring liquidity into the banking system. So another cut is very good for liquidity, but we know that the banks aren't going to use it to lend, given the uncertainty that we see across our economy. So yes, we expected it. Is it enough? Maybe not enough. Perhaps we need some innovation from the central bank around a post-COVID-19 stimulus, which I believe that the bank has got a bigger role to play. If you can just think innovatively, because inflation is not going to be such a problem. So therefore, they need to play a bigger role in the reconstruction and development of our economy post-COVID-19.
Lumkile, just run with that thought. What would you see the bank doing further, more than interest rate cuts, in other words?
I mean, there's lots of stuff that the bank can do. Firstly, we have our commodities that are produced by companies such as Sibanye in the platinum sector. So if they wanted to put more injection to the company, they could print money in exchange for the platinum in companies. So they, instead of them selling in the open market, the Reserve Bank buys the platinum to supply liquidity. But a much better innovative system would be using parts of the reserve, let's say about 100 billion rand of reserves, which they loan to the central, to National Treasury. National Treasury becomes a conduit to DFIs, to development finance institution. So that 200 billion rand is given to the Development Bank of South Africa, to the Industrial Development Corporation of South Africa, and to the Public Investment Corporation. Let's say they split into three. So suddenly, all these three institutions have got enough to invest in companies, to invest in municipalities for infrastructure, and they've got much better accountability structures than government, given what we've seen in government in the past few years. Therefore, a free, interest-free loan of 400 billion rand to the state passes through to the DFIs, we may see a very positive and quick return driven by investment by DFIs on infrastructure, on companies, particularly coming from the IDC for companies, and the PIC for both companies, as well as infrastructure on the economic side. And the DBSA looking more on social infrastructure, the water, the roads that they could add within South Africa and Southern Africa for economic integration.
Lukhanyo Mnyanda, you headlined Business Day yesterday on Lesetse Ganyago, the Reserve Bank governor, saying no ways are we printing money. And I think you, Lukhanyo, have been quite a fan of the quite mainline approach that the Reserve Bank has taken. Would you be agreed with the kind of very much broader approach which Lumkile is advocating here?
You know, like Harry, not being an economist and just being merely a journalist, I never really have strong opinions about these things. I'm just trying to understand what the specialists are saying and then trying to explain to people why people are doing certain things. I mean, as you said, the governor did make a statement yesterday when he was asked about printing money, and also he also brought up the issue of the legality of it and the restrictions that are placed by the Central Bank Act. So it's not a question of whether what he wants to do. Now he's saying, for one thing, he doesn't think the government needs it because he thinks he can raise money in the open markets quite freely. Secondly, he thinks obviously there's an argument about inflation that Lumkile does not accept, but also he makes another point about, or another argument about, the legality of the action. So those are sort of three things that he brought up as possible disincentives to do it. And I suppose, Lumkiri, what I could ask you as well, like regarding the financing of this project. I mean, you talked about, I mean, we still have a lot of savings in this country. If you look at the PIC, you look at the UIF, why are we going, skipping that step and going straight for low printing money or going for the reserves? Well, can't we be more creative about how we use the savings that we do have in these institutions? Like, I mean, like specifically the UIF and the PIC.
I think it's much easier at the moment to use our national assets. So the central bank and our government hold national assets. The others relate to other parts of South Africa, mainly our savers. So I think it's very important for us to tap on our savings as a last resort, with the state having shown how it can use our national assets for the benefit of all. And if we need to add more stimulus, those of us here in this discussion then are asked upon to prescribe assets to also contribute as proudly South African and as patriots in the drive to in the drive for an economic growth that's inclusive, that ensures that we've got a much stronger platform for sustainable long-term growth that filters through to the poor that have missed out in the past 25 years due to the ANC economic mismanagement.
Rob Rose, the kind of stimulus package that Lumkile is advocating here, is that something that should be coming from the central bank, or should we be looking to government itself to do a lot more?
I mean, I think they both have a role to play, like Lumkile said, but I do think that the central government is the key distributor of funding in this, and I think that's the one who should be, that's the department that should be taking the lead on this. I mean, we have two issues that we're trying to resolve. One of them is basically what happens during a lockdown period and during this crisis, because you don't want people to go to work. You essentially want them to stay at home. I think Paul Krugman in the New York Times said essentially you're putting the economy in an induced coma, and you need to provide life support during that time. And the life support is these additional liquidity measures, additional cash measures. But then allied to that is part of what Tito Mboweni spoke about yesterday, is the greater impetus towards growth, towards reinvigorating growth in the country. And I think these are two things. And to some extent, we're often confusing them in what we do. We're trying to deal with both problems and at once. And they actually require different responses. But I still think that what happened yesterday was a good thing in terms of injecting greater liquidity in terms of the interest rate cuts. It's a good move.
What it seemed to me also to demonstrate is that the Reserve Bank is there and willing to take action. In fact, if I think about it, the Reserve Bank has actually really taken quite aggressive action in the markets, in the banking sector, with interest rates since the start of the crisis. Whereas Genevieve Quintal, it feels to me like government has been very on top of the health stuff. But it feels like there's been actually very little economic, macroeconomic type action from government. Has the response been incredibly sluggish, do you think, from government itself to the economic challenges?
I think, Hillary, what happened is the lockdown, the first announcement of the lockdown came so quickly. Even if you look at the regulations, that the first set of regulations that were put in place, making everyone stay at home, banning certain products being sold, it's as if they didn't have enough time to really think through properly exactly how are we going to do this? How are we going to mitigate certain things? Are we going to allow these businesses to open or not? We saw a lot of back and forth in terms of regulations when it came to the taxis, who's an essential service. And so I think that we haven't heard from government since Cyril Ramaphosa announced that we're extending the lockdown. But I think they've realized they actually have to take time now to look at these regulations properly, to look at actually what needs to be done, to look at what needs to be done economically, because I think it was a bit of a mess in the first 2 weeks of the lockdown and a lot of uncertainty of what can and can't be done. The cabinet is meeting today, and I'm hoping that by the end of the week we have more clarity and that our ministers are actually talking with one voice. Like you say, health has been great. We've been getting great updates from the health minister, from people that are working with him, from the experts, but we're lacking a bit when it comes to other issues, like you say, that are connected to COVID and are suffering, our economy, businesses that are suffering because of the COVID-19 lockdown and the health issues around it.
Genevieve, are there any particular measures which we might expect out of the cabinet meeting?
In terms of the regulations, look, we've had a forum made up of Shabins and taverns go to court. They want to be able to open. I read a story earlier this week that some restaurants are starting to prepare. They want to be able to at least do takeaway, either through Uber Eats. I see Uber Eats are delivering essential services. There's the big debate over the tobacco ban, whether we should, whether cigarettes should be back on the shelves, whether you should be able to buy your tobacco. There's been a lot of talk about whether it's fueling the illicit cigarette trade. We've seen a lot of busts lately. So it's those small things. I think also a big thing, which for some people was such a big issue in the beginning, whether you can go out and walk your dog. I know in a lot of other countries that are on lockdown, you can go out and walk your dog and jog. And this seems to be a really big issue for a lot of people. So yes, I think maybe change regulations that might see a little bit of the economy start to move on again. Like I said, maybe takeaway and things like that. But I think those are, people are actually more looking towards regulation and maybe going to help make their life a bit easier in terms of the lockdown.
Lumkile, I see you nodding there. What are you expecting or hoping for out of this cabinet briefing by way of macroeconomic decisions from the government?
Firstly, in the letter that we had written to the president, some of us colleagues in the academia, we had asked for government to top up the social grant. So we believe that business is aligned to that that proposal, and I'm hoping that the minister will announce that he'll top up. It's going to probably cost him not much, about 6 billion rand per month for the next three. For the next 3 months at least, to top up, just to ensure that those that are receiving it have got enough cash. Besides that, really, it's an announcement that revolves around the social reforms that we saw in November, because it's very frustrating that, unlike many other countries where the Treasury and the Central Bank have been very innovative around tackling their domestic issues, the South African government, with all its institutions, have really been disappointing. And I think if they don't think outside the box, I think we have a calamity coming around destitution and famine for many households if no unorthodox thoughts and ideas aren't presented and coming through from government at this juncture.
The Financial Mail cover story this week on how COVID has killed the airline industry. And Rob Rose, I'm going to ask you, just give us a rundown on what this week's edition tells us. It's particularly topical in a week in which SAA may, as Business Day put it, be headed to its final resting place.
Yes, that was a great article. I think the issue is that the airline industry is perhaps at the forefront of many industries that have been hit badly by this virus. Nobody's traveling, and I think that even once the virus lifts, I think there's going to be a fundamental change in the way people do travel. So airlines were always a fairly marginal industry going back many decades, but this has done them serious damage. I think the loss, it's 44% down, I think, year on year in terms of global ticket sales. So it's quite precarious, even for airlines who were profitable before this. For example, Safair and Comair. If you leave out the basket case that is SA Airways, I think it was always a troubling picture anyway before this. So now it's going to be a very tough picture. And I think that what happens with SAA, Genevieve will have greater insight on this. I think will certainly be good for our fiscus. I think this is D-Day for SAA, and that's probably a good thing.
Let's get on to SAA in a second. But Rob, just give us a bit of background on Safair and Comair. And will South Africa have any domestic airlines left by the time this is over?
We'll have domestic airlines. I think that the ticket prices will have to adjust quite radically. I think load factors will change. It's a consolidation effort needed. But, before coronavirus hits us, I mean, Comair had a proud track record of 73 years of unbroken profits. And this year they were about to break it anyway and record a loss for various reasons, including the fact that, you know, they bought a couple of Boeing 737 Maxes, which they haven't been able to get off the tarmac yet. They also were owed R1 billion by SAA, and SAA isn't going to pay all of that, no doubt. A tough industry to begin with. SAF Air has started as a low-cost airline and has done pretty well over the last couple of years, and sort of struggled to the top of the heap in terms of Mango and Kalula and the low-cost airlines. And I think after this, there's going to have to be a structural adjustment to the way that pricing is done for airlines globally, and I think in South Africa too, we'll see that. But fewer airlines does mean the industry will be more competitive, and I think if SA Airways and SA Express and others aren't in the mix, then I think it'll be easier for the ones that remain to survive.
Genevieve Quintal, will SAA ever be in the mix again? Just recap what's happened this week so far.
Oh, I don't know, Hilary. So there was a letter yesterday that the SAA Business Rescue Practitioners had sent to the creditors, explaining that they'd heard from government, and government has basically said no more bailouts. Where we go from here, I'm not sure. We know that the last ANC-NEC meeting, they were quite emphatic that you need to save SAA. And in the mix of all of this, we had 2 weeks ago, during the lockdown, the SA Express Business Rescue Practitioners applied to court for liquidation of the airline. We're still waiting to hear where the government's going to oppose that application. But it seems pretty much that SAA might go the same way. If they're not getting any, if government's not going to give them any more guarantees or help them get money from outside of the country to help pay their debt, what then? Then the next step for the BRP, I could only imagine, and maybe I'm wrong and maybe someone on the panel could correct me, I would think that the next logical step would then have to be liquidation. They've already spoken about job cuts that happened before the lockdown. They were starting the Section 189 in terms of restructuring and cutting jobs. What's next? It seems the only logical way is liquidation.
Lumkile Mondi, what is next for SAA? And what should be next?
So for SAA, there's a combination of really clever ways of doing it. One is for some of the creditors who can gang up together and say, hey, with all the restructuring that's been forced by COVID-19, that Rob articulated very well, that there might be an opportunity to be a stress player going there. So let's gang together, convert our own positions, creditors, into equity, have a structure where we put in $100 million into it, and we keep the key management and the pilots at SAA to run it. And in the process, we repay those that are not willing to come to the party over a much longer term before. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is for the state to do what Genevieve is saying, to say, rest in peace, SAA, and start a new airline, AA2, something like that, where the state starts from scratch again and rebuild a new airline free from capture and corruption. So let's watch and see how ambitious the government is and how the ANC and its alliance partners are willing to let SA go.
Lucanio, how willing do you think the alliance partners are going to be to let SAA go? And do they have any option?
I was actually going to ask that question to Genevieve as a political specialist, but what I'm going to ask, because Lungile, from your perception, from your answer, it seems to me you're starting from the assumption that South Africa needs to have this airline. I mean, is it really, do we really need it? Because that seems to be the starting point. But I mean, like, it was not competitive before. There's a reason why the banks weren't funding it. It wasn't because they didn't like it, or it was nothing, something personal about it. I would assume it was because it wasn't viable, and to the point where they actually thought they couldn't take, you know, give it money that was, even when it was guaranteed by the state, because they knew they would get it back themselves. But SAA would probably end up gone one way or the other. And another question I was going to ask actually to Genevieve, actually maybe Rob, what is the politics of this? Because we've known since this COVID thing, like SAA and a few other things, or whether or not going to the IMF, they sort of become a bit of a proxy of the political struggles within the ANC. I mean, you saw that statement within from the Secretary Generals, you know, like rubbishing anything that Tito Mboweni had said, you know, SAA has to be saved. I mean, how much of that is really is about SAA, or is, and how much of it is really is about factions and politics?
Question to you, is this a proxy for the internal struggles, the SAA debate, and indeed the kind of battle that's developing about whether we should or shouldn't go to the IMF? Not that we are going, but the idea has been suggested.
Yeah, definitely. We know that there are factions within the ANC who want to see Cyril Ramaphosa fail. We heard a lot of talk before the lockdown. We were supposed to have an NGC. We're having an election. So yes, there will be, I think it's early to say exactly in what form. You know, we did have a statement from the Alliance. There was a meeting of the Alliance last week, and where the Alliance strongly said, look, South Africa in no way should be going to the IMF. The Alliance has also put together its own economic task team, which will be headed by Jesse Duarte, the Deputy Secretary General of the ANC. But they haven't given, they said they're going to also look at ways that they can help government put forward some policy decisions and policy ideas to government and how to get our economy going. They haven't given any detail on that. But yes, I do think that we will see, once this lockdown's done, because at this stage, everyone's focusing on getting South Africa through the COVID-19. I think anyone politically would be stupid to try to fight that now, because you won't have the support if you want to fight every little decision that the government is taking right now. But definitely, decisions that are made, some of them might come back to either bite the president or not, but it's definitely going to be used as a proxy, no doubt about it.
Rob Rose,
but I think it's too early to say exactly what those will be.
Rob, how damaging, if indeed these emerging battles are sort of proxy battles for the divide that are already there, how damaging could that be to South Africa's attempts to sort of get out of the economic crisis? How damaging might they be to our efforts to get out of the economic crisis around COVID?
I mean, I suppose battles like this are important because actually, like Lumkile said in the beginning, it's about whether we can get structural reforms going, and the crisis has brought that to a head, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's now's the time to have the discussion about why do we need a national airline, and if there's value in that airline. If, for example, the slots are valuable and if it has things that are value, then let's keep it. If there isn't any value to it and it's just a drain, get rid of it. I mean, now's the time it's brought that to a head. And I think what this has done, and which goes to your point, Hillary, is that I think it's reduced the space for ideologies to play a role in this. I think the exigencies of the economics will be what fundamentally drive it. And I think that's what will strengthen Cyril Ramaphosa's hand in this, because he represents economic rationalists in the party. And I think at the moment, it's the economy that's driving this particular debate. And I think that's what's going to predominate. If you listen to Ace Magashule speak last week or his statement about the IMF, it's clear that the man doesn't know anything about economics and he's clearly just out of his depth. So I think that this is a time when the economic rationalists will gain supremacy. And I think that's good for our emergence from both this crisis, this coronavirus crisis, and I think the wider GDP growth crisis in the country.
Just a quick word, Rob. Back to Rob for 1 second. Economic pragmatism prevails, we hope. There are moves to open up certain sectors of the economy or partially reopen them, even before the lockdown is ending. Just very quickly, which would be your vote, or where should we be opening up? Should we be opening up?
I think it's going to be, you have to open up the economy to some extent, because otherwise these businesses, the small businesses, will die because they're not getting the money. I mean, we talk about having all these great measures. The money's not getting into the hands of the small businesses. So I think you've got to open up gradually. I think you've got to be very smart about how you do it. I think Zweli Mkhize has got a pretty good team around him who can advise on, and they're already talking about a partial lifting of the lockdown. But it has to be very strategic so you don't So you can't just have a, you know, one day, oh, there's no lockdown tomorrow, and everyone's at the liquor city, all the journalists are there buying all the booze on the shelf, because that's what's going to happen.
But Lukanya, you're nodding. I'm going to give you and Lumkile each 1 minute for kind of how do you want to see the thing unfold in the next couple of weeks? What should be reopened? Should anything be reopened? Lukanya, 1 minute, and then Lumkile, I'm going to give you the closing word. Lukanya?
I'm not going to have add to what Rob said. I just agree with everything that Rob said. I'm sure Rob must be to his last bottle of wine now. He's probably quite desperate for the Woolies to open the wine section.
So I've been there twice today already.
I would also support that as well. And obviously, you won't be opening SAA again, like I hope. That
Open the liquor stores.
Not because I don't like SAA.
Lumkile, last word?
SAA into a liquor store depot.
Mining sector and the product export sector is critical for us. We need those forex reserves. Particularly if we're going to tap into the forex for the post-COVID reconstruction and development of at least 200 billion rand for DFIs to invest in businesses, infrastructure for economic accreditation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, panel. That is all we have time for this evening. Please join us again next week for another edition of Editing Aloud.